The other day I was thinking about my wedding and how we all used to be a little more innocent. My wife and I celebrated our wedding at an old country house in Pinch, West Virginia, on a hot and humid summer night. We invited an eclectic mix of family and friends. Some were country folks, others were city slickers from New York. But everyone was eating food and tipping back long neck bottles of beer and eating cherries soaked in moonshine. Situated on the back porch was a band called the Carpenter Ants, a four-man combo with a frontman named Charlie T. Now, a few people had been dancing throughout the party, but when Charlie T and the Carpenter Ants kicked into their version of Bill Monroe's I'm Working on a Building, people seemed to gravitate to the dance floor like moths to a naked light bulb. Seeing all of these loved ones getting caught up in the spirit of this gospel song is one of my most cherished memories from that day.
We're talking about the Holy Ghost. We're talking about the Holy Ghost. We're talking about the Holy Ghost.
And I remember Charlie T adding a twist.
It's all about the Muslims.
Holy Ghost.
It's all about the Christians.
Did you catch that? He listed Christians, Jews, and Muslims as brothers, all working on the same building. And then Charlie T topped it off with, this was back in 1998. In just a few years, things were going to change completely. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting, this is Us and Them, the podcast where we explore America's cultural divides. I'm Trey Kay. I actually think about that moment at my wedding quite often. Charlie T, caught up in the celebration, lets out an Allahu Akbar, praising God. A few family members noticed, but no one thought much of it. If it were to happen today, I think it might not be so well received. These days, Americans are used to hearing Allahu Akbar this way.
Allahu Akbar!
I found this clip on YouTube. It shows a group of Muslim militants shouting Allahu Akbar after hitting an aircraft with a missile.
Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar! Allahu Akbar!
And more recently, in Paris, four men brandishing AK-47 assault rifles entered a concert hall shouting Allahu Akbar and opened fire. They killed 130 people. In the West, when we hear Allahu Akbar in the news, it sounds so sinister, but it really just means God is great in Arabic, something that a lot of us think. I talked about this with my friend Charlie T, the guy who sang at my wedding.
My real name is Charles Tewitt, but everybody knows me as Charlie T. I'm Muslim, and I've been Muslim since I was 11 years old.
I wanted to know why Charlie T took this gospel song and topped it off with Allahu Akbar.
There's a section of the song where where we say we're talking about the Holy Ghost, we're talking about the Holy Ghost. And then I say, it's all about the Muslims. It's all about the Christians. It's all about my Jewish brothers. There ain't no other. Working on the building, praying for my children. I tried to use that to be inclusive of all, because there is more than just Muslims. There is more than just Christians or Jews.
And when, how did you come up? Do you remember coming up with that?
It just came out of nowhere. God sent it. I used it. And at the end, usually I'll say Allahu Akbar. My reason for doing that, because I am Muslim. I acknowledge all other religions. I acknowledge all other peoples. But I'm Muslim. And I had to do something that was relevant to me.
If you've listened to this podcast for a while, you know I've got friends from all across the ideological spectrum. And maybe you do too. And if you do, then when horrible events like the massacre in Paris and San Bernardino happen, maybe your inbox and Facebook feed are filled with videos like this.
Hello, everybody. Wild Bill for America here, reminding you of an old saying. It doesn't matter how much lipstick you put on a pig, it's still a pig.
Wild Bill is this dude decked out in a wide-brimmed cowboy hat who posts conservative editorials on YouTube. One recurring theme in his videos, warning people of a growing Islamic threat.
ISIS is hacking, slashing, raping, burning, and murdering their way towards the West. Muslim men slicing the heads off little infant boys and girls. Why? Because those toddlers are not Muslim. The brutality of these monsters is finally waking up a few people.
And then Wild Bill sounds the alarm.
Well, listen up. Here's a Wild Bill bullet of truth for the free world. ISIS is Islam. We are finally seeing Islam without the lipstick. For decades, left-wing media and elected officials have been desperately putting lipstick on Islam, hoping to convince people that Islam is a religion of peace, desperately ignoring the overwhelming evidence to the contrary.
Wild Bill lays out his case that Muslims might seem like good neighbors because that's what the Quran tells them to do. But he warns that their holy book actually directs them to
be a friend until you are strong enough to crush them.
Crush them. That's what Wild Bill thinks all Muslims want to do to non-Muslims. And he thinks that's what the West should do to Islam. That's why he says we need to be wary of the growing number of Muslim immigrants. And it's not just folks on the internet ringing the alarm bell of a Muslim threat. It's presidential candidates like Ted Cruz, Ben Carson, and Donald Trump.
I want surveillance of certain mosques, okay? If that's okay. I want surveillance of these people that are coming in, the Trojan horse. I want to know who the hell they are.
Islamophobia can take a lot of forms, from ripping off the headscarves of Muslim women to the horrific shooting at a Sikh temple in Wisconsin back in 2012 because of the mistaken belief that Muslims wear turbans. In the fall of 2014, a fired factory worker in Oklahoma took a 10-inch fillet knife and beheaded one of his colleagues. The police and the FBI found no links to terrorism. They considered it a case of workplace violence. But there were reports that the man had been trying to convert his colleagues to Islam. Around that same time, a friend of mine posted an article on Facebook from WCHS, the ABC news affiliate in Charleston, West Virginia, where I grew up. The headline read, "What We Know About ISIS Movements Near West Virginia." Some of my friends on Facebook felt these stories proved that Islamic terrorists were moving closer to them, or even worse, already among them. Really? Was it possible that ISIS militants were training in the hills and hollers of West Virginia without a bunch of hillbillies taking notice? Somehow I doubted that. Still, I can't say that I wasn't also a little bit freaked out. Nearly 6 people in the United States have been arrested this year for helping support or plot with ISIS. And the recent terrorist attack in San Bernardino has left everyone feeling uneasy. Those attackers didn't train with ISIS, but they pledged allegiance to help the group, and that turned them into terrorists. In some ways, the message of Wild Bill was embedded in my psyche. But I can also see Wild Bill as the shadow of Jihadi John, you know, the masked ISIS executioner. They both want to crush their opponents. This internal conflict inspired me to do something I'd never done before. Visit the local mosque. The imam at the Islamic Association of West Virginia told me that I could come by and meet with him after evening prayers. I arrived around 8 p.m. The facility serves mainly as a mosque, but also doubles as a community center. It's located in a part of South Charleston that's kind of off the beaten path. There were only a few cars in the parking lot. It was a weeknight, and I thought that maybe Muslims were kind of like Christians who did more of their worshiping on the weekends. It turns out that the big day of worship is on Friday. There was no one to greet me when I walked in, and everything was really quiet. Then the silence was broken by
Allah. Sami'a Allahu liman hamidah.
I'm embarrassed to admit it, but that Allahu Akbar made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. The warnings from Wild Bill flashed through my mind. For a moment, I wondered if I was in danger. Years ago, I watched the video of an Al-Qaeda man sawing off the head of Nick Berg, an American radio repairman working in Iraq. In that instant, I imagined being executed that way. Fortunately, that flash of fear didn't last. I walked up the stairs and was greeted by Saud Ashraf, a local physician. He led me into a conference room and introduced me to the imam, Etishamu Haq, and another doctor, Hazim Ashab. The imam told me that he understood why I'd come. He said that since 9/11, and more recently with the brutality of ISIS, people had a lot of questions about Islam.
One time a priest invited me, and I went to that church, and then he said, "Imam, there is this, like, you know, difference of opinion among my congregation, and they, some of them feel like, you know, why did we invite the Muslim imam? But majority of them feel like, you know, we should ask you direct questions. We should learn from you. So please expect anything." And I said, like, that's okay. I mean, I can understand in this world, in this time, right?
What would they ask?
Usually they ask, like, do you have four wives?
Well, do you?
I said, ask my wife.
So knowing they could expect anything, the imam and the two physicians gathered to answer my questions. I asked them one that Wild Bill might ask. What do they think of ISIS? Dr. Ashab responded.
You can find love and hatred in the Quran the same way you find it in the Bible. We are judging a religion through the actors, through a sect of people who claim to represent that religion.
But Dr. Ashab says ISIS doesn't represent his religion.
When I'm faced with radicals and radical ideas, I remember Woody Guthrie. And I remember, this land is my land, this land is your land, from California to New York Island, this land is for me and you. This land is for me and you.
Dr. Ashab was born in Palestine and later lived in Syria. Imam Haq is from India. Now they live in this land that was made for you and me. But to guys like Wild Bill and Donald Trump, Woody Guthrie wasn't singing about these men. They see all Muslims like cargo in the belly of a Trojan horse brought within our borders, just waiting for the right time to strike. If that was Imam Haq's secret intention, he was a brilliant actor. After a couple hours of talking, he went into his office and brought out some bags of dried figs. He was worried about us getting hungry. The imam reminded me that Muslims are not new to southern West Virginia. Muslims have been living peacefully in the community long before militant extremism sparked a suspicion of them.
In Charleston, we have this cemetery right in the middle of the Christian cemetery. When we die, we are buried close to their graves. When our children are born, they're born in the same hospital. They're getting educated in the same schools. So that is the beautiful thing about, you know, being American, being in America, that you have this right to explain yourself, and people will not judge you by someone else's action. And that's the beautiful thing. If not here, then where? If it doesn't happen here, or if we then make it happen here, then where in the world?
The other physician, Saud Ashraf, was born in India, but he grew up in Connecticut. He told me that he loves America and says the story of our nation's founders, Washington, Adams, Franklin, and Jefferson, resonate with him.
Absolutely. And so this is the irony. As Muslims, we feel, and I think you could probably ask most Muslims this, and they'll probably say in the affirmative, that when we look at the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution, we say that, wow, how close this is to the actual Islamic ideals. And that's a story that I wish that the rest of America would know about Muslims, how they look at America. I don't know of any Muslim that has issues at all rather than feel pride.
This land is your land, and this land is my land, from the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
You know, I really enjoyed my visit to the mosque. It confirmed what I suspected, what actually made common sense, that I'm afraid of radical Muslims, not regular Muslims. And I was telling this to a friend of mine, a friend who proudly identifies as a conservative Christian. His response is that he didn't like the term radical Muslim. He felt that it was redundant and that all Muslims are predisposed to violence. And then I had an idea. I'd invite my friend and Dr. Saud Ashraf to go to a Bob Evans restaurant, and we'd hash things out over biscuits and gravy. And there at this Bob Evans summit, these guys could ask each other difficult questions. And maybe we could dispel some myths and misinformation. Maybe we could understand each other a little better. But this didn't happen. At first, my Christian friend seemed game, but then he decided it would be too dangerous for him to meet a Muslim face to face. And he was serious. He believed that if he met with Dr. Ashraf or any Muslim, that they would mark him and come after him and his family. And when I tried to get him to reconsider, he refused. And when I suggested using audio recordings of his comments about Muslims for this episode, he accused me of putting his family at risk. In an email, he wrote, "Trey, after seeking counsel from some trusted Christian friends, I'm declining. It's indisputable that Muslims kill people who disagree with them. I do not fear death, but I cannot risk my innocent loved ones suffering the repercussions of the discussion you propose. So, in lieu of my Bob Evans summit," I called Dr. Ashraf and asked him what he thought of this response.
So, I mean, it's unfortunate that he feels that way. Clearly, I think he probably needs to get out and take that risk of meeting someone personally rather than just informing himself through others' experience or what he's reading or hearing on media or social media. You know, all I can tell him is he has nothing to fear or feel insecure about. We'd be happy to sit down and chat.
We were planning on ending this episode here, with this impasse, a divided America, us and them. And then the Paris attacks happened, and I felt that I needed to reach out to Dr. Ashraf again. He invited me to sit down for supper with his wife and three kids. The main topic of dinner conversation? The driver's ed exam his oldest daughter was prepping for.
Mom, driver's ed is not coming to an end, so it's a final.
You remember this?
Yes. I never crashed. Yes, I've driven twice, and all I did was drive perfectly. Up with others, we're going too fast. You know what? Was it too fast?
Like just about everyone else in the world, Dr. Ashraf was shaken up by Paris, depressed by the attacks, and deeply disturbed by the reaction against Muslims and Syrian refugees coming to America.
You know, a lot of American Muslims that live here and have lived here and born here and raised up here and grew up here and all of a sudden we're having to explain for some people over there who we don't even know.
And so in a way, we're being victimized as a result of their actions as well, because we've been put in a court almost and being judged and having to explain our position on things that's really not something that's part of our religious tradition.
And here I am, just another guy sticking a mic in his face, asking him to be the spokesperson for the entire Muslim world. If this bothers Ashraf, he doesn't show it. What does bother him, though, is what he's heard from other Muslim parents. They say their kids are being questioned at school. Where are you from? What do you think of the attacks in Paris? Are you a terrorist? These kids, Ashraf says, are being put on the spot by their teachers and their peers. They're being made to feel like they don't belong.
That is a worry, and I worry about the kids growing up, born and raised here. And what they're hearing is, well, go back to where you came from. And obviously their natural response is, well, I'm from West Virginia, or I'm from Virginia. Where do you want me to go back to?
What does it feel like to have such fear and hatred trained on Muslims?
As a Muslim, so, I mean, it doesn't feel good. All of a sudden, your loyalty is being called out. Your worth and value as a person is being called out. That somehow you're less of an American, less of a citizen, less loyal for something you haven't done. Yeah, and then, of course, it starts. You start wondering about, we're talking about freedom of religion, but oh no, that doesn't include you. Freedom of expression, yes, but doesn't include you. So that kind of hypocrisy that starts hitting you head on, then you start wondering, do I belong here? And I don't think that needs to happen, that we need to go down that pathway. That's not healthy, and nor is that what America stands for.
I agree with Dr. Ashraf completely. It's not what America stands for. I now consider Saud Ashraf a friend, and that never would have happened if I hadn't taken what seemed at the time to be a risk, if I hadn't visited the mosque. I wish my scared friends would interact with Muslim Americans like the Ashrafs, who really are a run-of-the-mill American family. Sadly, I'm afraid things aren't going to get better for Muslims in America for quite some time. It's not because Muslims aren't moral, patriotic neighbors willing to condemn atrocities done in the name of their religion. It's mostly because many of us who aren't Muslim are afraid. Afraid in the same way we feared Japanese Americans and herded them into internment camps during World War II. That dark time in our history is a reminder that we aren't at our best when we're afraid. President Obama said the same thing when he addressed the nation after the San Bernardino attacks.
It is the responsibility of all Americans, of every faith, to reject discrimination. It is our responsibility to reject religious tests on who we admit into this country. It's our responsibility to reject proposals that Muslim Americans should somehow be treated differently. Because when we travel down that road, we lose.
But what do you think? Are you able to see the difference between radical extremists and regular people? If you're Muslim, how is your life being affected by the violent acts done in the name of Islam? And if you're Christian, how do you disavow violence in the name of your faith? Can you let us know by connecting with us on Twitter or Facebook? Or contact us through our feedback link at usandthempodcast.com. There's no ampersand.